Hey, Parshas Hazinu. We don't always get a chance to discuss Parshas Hazinu. It's a kind of a quirk of the calendar, and we're very grateful for this opportunity. So maybe before we start talking about the fourth Aliyah, which is very representative of a lot that's in this Parsha, but just first to talk about the whole concept of Aliyos in Hazinu to begin with. And both the notion of the breakdown of Aliyos and also the whole format of the Parsha, which is different than other Parshas. The Torah, as you know, is read as a song. It's written as a song. It's referred to as a Shira. And that might be what the Torah was talking about in the end of Parshas Vayelech, where the 613th mitzvah appears, and we're told Va'ata kitzvu lechav es ha'shira hazos. And Shira is either a reference to the whole Torah or a reference specifically to Hazinu. And the Rambam writes that we have to write the whole Torah because of Hazinu. So really the mitzvah is to write down Hazinu, and that leads to a mitzvah to write down the whole Torah. But one way or another, the language of Shira is very noteworthy here. The Ramban writes that it refers to the fact that this is always said as a Shira, which might be a reference to something the Rambam talks about in Hilchos Tefillah, that there were places where every day they recited the Shira of Hazinu. But as we'll see, as we go through especially some of the psukim in our Aliyah for today, in the fourth Aliyah, that it's not always such a happy song. This seems to be one of those depressing songs, at least in places. And some understand the language of Shira differently, that the word may have other connotations as well. So in the Paras Yosef HaChadosh, for example, he quotes a number of interpretations, he quotes from the Feder Katz, that here Shira is Lashon Tsar. It's a representation of sadness. And in the Mincha Belula, he writes that it's from the language of Ashurenu, as we find in Sefer Bamidbar, and it refers to predictions of the future. And that's certainly a major theme in this parasha. The Ksav HaKabbalah writes that Shira is here used in the same Shoresh as it is in song, which means from the Lashon Yashar, that refers to that which is straight. The Paras Yosef HaChadosh also quotes from one of the Rebbe's of Belz that as difficult as some of these psukim are in terms of their content, but they have a benefit for us, which is something we'll also see a little bit within our Aliyah, that hopefully by reading about them, we will be saved from having to live them. And that's in the spirit, in a very different way, of Kal Osik B'Torah Z'Ola Ki'ilu Hikriv Ola, that we find that sometimes we want to perform a mitzvah, like the Karbanos, and we're not able to. So the Gemara tells us that learning about them is as if we fulfilled them. Here, in a very different sense, we don't want to live out what the Psukim describe, but learning about them helps to replace them actually happening. And really, it's not just in this technical sense that learning something is as if you're actually doing it, but in the Musar sense of this parasha, that being aware of what could potentially be in store if we don't shape up is a corrective, and that will stop us from having, God forbid, to actually endure what the psukim refer to. We referred before to the idea that the concept of Aliyos has a different focus when it comes to Hazinu, and that this is really the only parsha in the Torah where the Gemara tells us how the Aliyos should be broken down. You know, the Gemara Rosh Hashanah, Daf Lamed Aleph, Mud Aleph, has an acrostic there, Haziv, Lach, Hey, Zayin, Yud, Vav, Lamed Chaf, and tells us that this is how we should read Hazinu, that this is a way to remember the first letter of the first six Aliyahs, how the Aliyahs should be broken down. The Gemara is telling us a way to remember it through this combination of letters, Haziv Lach, and that's how it should be read in shul also. So on the one hand, so that seems to be very helpful. Perhaps ironically, here we have this direct instruction as to how the parsha should be broken down, but there's actually a number of ways to come to these combinations. I believe there are six shittas in the Rishonim, actually, what this is meant to indicate, so it's a little bit less helpful on the surface than it could be. What we actually have is the way the Rambam brings it in Hilchos Tefillah and Perek Yud Gimel, also from the Rif, that's what's brought in the Shulchan Aruch, that that's the way it should be broken down, the way we have it. Rav Soloveitchik, Rav Shechter quotes Rav Soloveitchik and Nefesh HaRav as saying that this is actually a din d'oraisa, even though Kriyas HaTorah in general on a regular schedule is not a din min HaTorah, but breaking the parsha up this way is a din min HaTorah, because that's a din of Kichsava. And for that reason, the Rav disagreed with the Rama. The Rama over there in Tav Chav Ches quotes from the Mordechai that this is only the way it should be broken down on Shabbos, and during the weekdays, laying on Monday and Thursday, you don't have to break it down this way. But the Rav said differently than the Rama. He said that this is an inherent requirement in how the parsha should be structured, and therefore, even during the weekdays, we should break the Aliyahs down in such a fashion. This idea that we're told to remember it through this acrostic of Haziv Lach, so there's a significance to that as well. Perhaps Rebbeinu Bachya understands that we should look at the words and see it as a promise, that, or see it at least as an aspiration, that Ziv is another word for glory, for that which shines, and Haziv Lach, we're looking for a return to the glory, and that should be on our minds as we think about this parsha. The Maharsha in Rosh Hashanah writes that it's a remez to the glow on Moshe Rabbeinu's face, that Ziv is for our sake and to help us, and that's what we should keep in mind as we think about this acrostic. Rav Moshe Wilson of Tara Vidas, in the Sefer Emunah Sitecha, so he notes that Ziv is essentially a synonym for Hadar, for that which is glorious and beautiful, and we know that that's on our minds as we think of getting a lulav and esrog for a sukkah, that we look for a pre-eitz hadar, as the Torah describes. But the Gemara also has a drasha on the word hadar, that it doesn't just mean beautiful, but it means hadar b'ilan mishana l'shana, that which lasts on the tree throughout all the seasons, throughout all the year. And Rav Wolfson said that's also a remez for the Jewish people, that just like this fruit is able to survive on the tree throughout all the seasons, throughout the summer and the winter and everything that comes against it, everything that's thrown at it, so too the Jewish people are able to survive through all their ups and downs. And again, it's going to be one of the major themes of the parsha, so to have that in mind is also a long-range hope that we hold on to. The Rambam in Hilchos Tefillah in Perek Yud Gimel has a very significant statement about how to approach Hazinu, and it also relates to the breakdown in Aliyahs, that normally, so we have a concern when we divide up Aliyahs in the Parshios that we want to end on a positive note. We always want to be mafsik b'davar tov. So as you'll notice in this difficult parsha, that does not always seem to be the case. And that's something that would call our attention. So the Rambam says that in Parshas Hazinu, we don't have to be mafsik on a davar tov because it's a tochacha. So therefore, it accomplishes its goal by allowing us to end even on something which is not positive but is scary, and is going to have that effect. So if Nassan Gestetner in Sefer Al Torah in the Laharis Nassan, he says, but still, why shouldn't we still look to be mafsik and a davar tov? Because the impact of the Musar would still be there even if we don't stop on these notes. So we just mentioned, well, maybe it makes it more impactful. Something actually will come up a little bit as we look at this Aliyah. But in addition to that, he suggests that it's actually a positive thing to end on these notes of Musar, because we have the notion of Tshuva Me'ahava, which I think we spoke about a little bit the other day, that through Tshuva Me'ava we're able to turn our averos into mitzvos, and therefore that's actually positive. So even though we're looking at some very scary phrasing here, and things which seem very negative, but ultimately we have the power to make it into a davar tov, and that's the hope, that's the goal. And therefore, ending on that note, not only is meant to emphasize the Musar, but perhaps also even to fulfill this goal of a davar tov by bringing about that which is good. And that's a crucial part of the perspective as well as we look at these psukim. So all of this is certainly relevant to the fourth Aliyah, our Aliyah focus this year, where certainly we do need to be reminded to have some kind of a positive approach to these psukim, which are overall very difficult. So here we find that Pasuk begins, the fourth Aliyah, Pasuk Yitas, Vayara Hashem Vayinatz Mikas Bana Vubinosa. So Hashem sees and he is angry. He is vexed. He is upset at what he sees from the behavior of his sons and daughters. So first of all, that's unusual language. The idea of sons and daughters being emphasized, we normally assume that sons includes daughters, and we don't need to be told when we see a reference like Banav that that's also going to include the daughters. So the idea that that has to be highlighted is something the Mefarshim talk about, the Ramban and the Abravanel, saying in this case it's actually meant to highlight a significant role that the daughters will play in the future, that they will be even more involved in Avodah Zarah, very different than other points in Jewish history. But that this is something that is predicted in the future, and therefore that's being highlighted here. But the idea specifically of referring to children at all, of Banav Ubnosav, so as the Abravanel emphasizes, this is to show us that there is a greater pain when there is rebellion from one's children than there is from strangers. And therefore this is a way of highlighting just how bad the Avodah Zarah is. The Maritz Dushinsky, in his Sefer Al HaTorah, so he suggests that the reference here is that there are people who just indulge every desire they have when they're younger, and then when they're older and they're not able to do as much, so then they are ready to do tshuva, and they're ready to become big tzaddikim. Now we know the Rambam describes that that is an inferior form of tshuva, maybe your only option at that point, but that tshuva is really significant when somebody still has the ability to continue in the path that he's been going on, instead chooses to go on a different path and to do the right thing. So that's really full tshuva. But here, Maritz points out to a different problem, that in addition to the fact that it's not so impressive, but also in this individual's youth. So he will have been raising children in his youth and influencing them on a negative path. So it's wonderful that he wants to do tshuva when he's older, but he's already raised a generation of sons and daughters who have been influenced by his earlier lifestyle, and that's going to leave a lasting harm. So that's also going to be a source of great anguish, and yet another reason to try to make sure that you get your act together much earlier. And the Mario Diskin, he has a drasha about this, which we'll refer to a little bit more in a moment, but he also suggests that maybe the language here is because God is looking into the future, and they're symbolically children right now, meaning this Avodah Zarah hasn't yet happened, but looking at them now in this stage, he is foretelling what's going to happen in the future, that there's going to be a Avodah Zarah performed by these people. So he's referring to them now in their earlier stage, before that's happened, and referring to them as if they're children, as if they're little sons and daughters. And that's an interesting reference, because it's perhaps reflective also of the Yesod that's attributed to the Chassam Sofer, that some use to explain the concept of Ben Sarah Mora, that we have this notion that the Ben Sarah Mora is punished now, even though he hasn't yet done all the terrible things that he's likely to do, but he's Nidon Al Shem Sofo. And that seems to contradict a principle that we have in Hilchus Tshuva, that a person is judged based on the here and now, Sher Hushan. So how is it that we can hold somebody responsible for the future? So some explain, I believe Rav Zevin has an explanation along these lines, pointing to the words of the Chassam Sofer, that it's not simply about a prediction of the future that's not at all relevant right now, but it reflects the fact, in the case of Ben Sora Ramora, that he's already exhibited these tendencies, and it's just going to get worse. It's just going to follow along the same path. So yes, normally we judge somebody about Sher Husham when there's something completely unrelated to now that's going to happen in the future, which we only know through Ruach HaKodesh. So then it's not fair to hold the individual responsible now. But if there's already the seeds of that behavior, you can already see how it's going to develop later on into something worse. So then it is fair to hold them responsible now. And perhaps there's a little bit of a hint of this here as well, that this reference is saying that even if it hasn't fully developed into the kind of what is our, the kind of rebellion that it will be, but we already see the hints of that, and that's something that we have to take recognition of, and that's going to have an impact. So this next pasuk is of course highly significant, where the language is Vayomer Astira Fanai Mehem Era Macharisom Kidor Talpuchos Hema Bonim Lo Emun Bom. So God says, I will hide my face from them, and then we'll see how things work out, because they are an upside down generation. They are children with no loyalty. So here, this whole language of Hester Panim is language that we are familiar with, of God hiding his face from us. And what exactly that represents is a good question. First of all, is that a good thing or a bad thing? So on the surface, it's certainly a bad thing that we don't feel God's presence, but it's possible that it has aspects of benefit to us. And we know that we have this language connected to Megillas Esther, that it represents also God looking out for us in ways that we don't necessarily see overtly. So the language of Hester Panim is a little bit ambiguous, and again, that's going to be a theme throughout this Aliyah, throughout this Parsha. The Meshech Chachma here has a comment where he connects this to a pasuk in Tehillim. Pasuk has the language of Afapav Yuchanu Bnei Adam, that eyelids will test people. So he says that the imagery is that eyelids are actually there to protect your eyes. If you had no covering over your eyes at any time, so then your eyes would be very vulnerable and they wouldn't last long at all. But you could also think that, but I can't see, my eyes are closed, so therefore I'm at a disadvantage. So the question is, how will you approach this? So you can't always necessarily feel God's presence directly, and that's what we call free will, that you are able to make decisions as if you can't necessarily perceive in the moment God's presence. But that's what gives us the ability to rise to the top. So it's going to be a test for us how we relate to the Hester Panim is similar to the eyelids. We relate to the eyelids as something that seemingly is keeping us sightless right now, but actually is providing us to the opportunity. And that's the test, and that's also what this Hester Panim represents. The Mario Diskin, we mentioned before, Shulayb Diskin, has a very long marach about this. There's a Sefer Maral Diskin al Torah that's a much shorter Pesukim. Maral Diskin was one of the Rabbanim in Eretz Yisrael before the state, and he was known as the Brisker Rav before the Soloveitchiks. My great-great-grandfather was a Talmud of his. And there's a Chuvas we have from the Maral Diskin. There's also a Sefer al Torah. It's a collection of various comments. But more recently, they published a new volume of material al-HaTorah from Maral Diskin, his long marachas. And he has a long maracha about this, about the whole concept of Hester Panim. And he talks there about the fact that ultimately this is an advantage, even if it does mean negativity in the moment, and it means vulnerability in the moment. But it's a Kadosh Baruch Hu's decision that if we are going to be held to account directly for our averos and our very, very slow path to tshuva, so then HaKadosh Baruch Hu would have to, Rachmana Litzlan, take much harsher action against us. So instead, the alternative is the Hester Panim. This is kind of looking the other way, so to speak. and allowing the long time necessary for tshuva, and of course that comes with terrible suffering because of the hester panim, but it is still better than the alternative, and that's also the somewhat positive spin, or the relatively positive spin, that's associated with it. The Ramban comments that up until now, it's been Moshe Rabbeinu speaking, and at this point, for Yom Rastira Fanai, so now this is HaKadosh Baruch Hu taking over, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is speaking. So he explains this based on a statement of the Ramchal in his Das Tfunos, which again relates to so much about this Aliyah and about the Parsha, that everything in HaKadosh Baruch Hu does, which seems to us good or bad as far as our perception, but it brings the world closer to completion, as the Gemara discusses about the idea of having a separate bracha for good news and bad news, atov hamet is for good, and dayanemis is for bad, but the Gemara says really everything should be atov hametiv, because if we really understood, so we would know that everything is for the best. But because we are limited in our perception, so we can't understand that, so we think there's good news and bad news. So he writes in that sense that here also, so like at this point, that's the nature of what's being conveyed here. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu is taking over the speech because this is something that's beyond human understanding and has to be appreciated in that sense. So this language of Dor Tafuchos, that it is something that is, there is a generation that is upside down. So what exactly the imagery of that is? So here there are many comments, as you'd imagine.
Recording in progress.
Okay, so to some of the interpretations about Dor Tafuchos, so Rav Shamshon Fal Hirsch writes that the idea is that you think you don't need God, so therefore God leaves you, and you see how you like it. It's basically the idea of a reversal, and he writes that it refers to the fact that they're fickle, and they change back and forth, so they go this way and that way. That's the connotation of being upside down. They take what they need, and then they're not there when they don't need something, so to speak, that kind of a relationship. And the Meshech Chachma has a comment over here that it represents opposite midos in people, that you have people, human beings have attributes that by their very nature can go in both directions. Every good has bad that's built into it, and it's a question of how you use it. So when human beings choose to activate the midah in a positive way, and sometimes therefore to flip it around, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu reacts the same way with nature. And so therefore if we choose to make that which is negative into a positive in terms of our midos, so then HaKadosh Baruch Hu does the same thing with nature. He makes that which is bad good, and vice versa, Chalilah. So that's also a part of the message that's conveyed here. There is a statement in the Medrash in the Bamidbar Rabba that this is a reference to the Meraglim, and it's striking. What does this have to do with the Meraglim? So the Reish Rav, Rav Aaron Levine, who was the grandfather of Rabbi by Dr. Aaron Levine, Chutzadik Lebracha, also had the name of Aaron Levine. So he discusses what the imagery here is specifically about the Meraglim, and he notes the question that's often asked in Parashat Shlach: what did the Meraglim really do wrong? If they were given this mission to report and they came back with their honest opinions, so why should that be held against them? And he suggests that you can tell what a person is trying to convey when they're not necessarily being objective, but they're trying to stack a message a certain way, so you can tell from how they leave off. And that's the impression they want to create. So the Meraglim specifically putting the bad things at the end, so that's part of what they were trying to do. That reflects their intention. And that's why they're called tapuchos, turning things around and making sure to arrange things in a way that it has a certain impact. This relates to what we said before, that we want to end an aliyah on a positive note, because it does make a difference how you end something. It's not just about the content of all being equal wherever it is, but there is an impact that is created by how you end something. So the fact that the Meraglim chose specifically to move things around so that the negative information is a final impression, so that shows us what their intentions were, what their goals were. And that's a big part of the problem, and that's a big part of what we are left with. So this language of banim lo uman, banim lo imun bam, banim lo imun bam, these are children with no loyalty, with no faith. And here, Chazkel Levenstein had commented that this is in the same vein of what we just saw about Dor Tapuchos, a reference to Avodah Zarah. Everything is upside down. Everything is the opposite of what it should be. So here the Torah is telling us they have no loyalty to God. They are worshiping idols. And Rashi has an interpretation here that this is a language of raising children, like we find in Megillas Esther, Vehi Omein, and that even though these are God's children, but they are not recognizable. And Rav Olba has a comment over here that the whole message of the Torah is about chinuch for its own sake, that we should grow and be trained and take over for our midos. And this is children of God, the Jewish people, are unrecognizable. But on the other hand, here you have a positive statement also, and again, this is just reflective of so much about this parsha and this aliyah. The Gemara in Kedushim, Daf Lamagov, Min Aleph, says, oh, you see that even when we're being called Ovdei Avodah Zarah and unfaithful, but we're still called banim, we're still identified as children, and that's something that we should take pride in. That's something that we should appreciate and recognize as hope for the future. So here the next pasuk, with next two pasukim together, so heim kununi below kel, ki asuni b'havlehem, v'ani akniyem below am, v'goy naval achisem. So they angered me with non-gods, and they got me angry with their havalim, so I will respond in kind. I'll get them angry with no nation, with a non-nation. And with nations of fools, I will anger them. Ki esh, next pasuk says, ki esh karcha v'api, that there is a fire that has come up in my anger, v'atikad ashol tachtis, v'techel eretz v'gulav, t'ad most deharim. Again, very scary psukim here, talking about this great fire that comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu's anger, and that goes all the way down to the base of mountains, which certainly represents a tremendous destructive power. We talk about the whole question about how we could fight Iran if they get nuclear bombs, and the discussion is that the countries that would fight would have to have firepower that could go through mountains. So here, that's what the Torah is describing here. It's very intense. And the idea of Ba'api, of God's anger. So that's also significant. And the Sifri has a comment here, Sifri has a comment here, that Piranias comes Ba'af, that disaster to the world comes with anger. And the Torah Tamima explains that that's probably a reference to the idea that Kevin Shinit Nevishus Lamashus Lahashmas, when the Malach HaMavis is given the green light to destroy, Eino Mavchin Bein Tzadik LaRasha, it doesn't distinguish between that which is righteous and that which isn't righteous. And the Torah Tamima says that the imagery of that is anger, because we know when people get angry, they act in a way that sometimes against their own interests, and not necessarily only doing things that are productive and only focused on that which is angering them. They act in an irrational way. This is evocative of an often quoted comment of the Stipler, in a Sefer HaTorah, when it talks about the Makos, and the Torah says that the Makab Tzvardeya was originally one frog, and the Mitzrim hit the frogs and they divided up into more. So the question clearly is, So now why keep hitting the frogs if you see it's just making your problem worse? That's how they expand. So that's how they multiply. So then stop hitting the frogs. And the stifler has a comment there that this is indicative and representational of the midah of kas, that when people get angry, so they act in ways that are irrational, they do things that are destructive and against their own interests. So Kadosh Baruch Hu was not chalila irrational, but the idea of understanding that it's not going to necessarily distinguish between those who deserve and those who don't, the Eino Malchim in Tzadik L'Rasha, is represented by this imagery of Af. And the psukim continue. So here, this next pasuk is again representative of the somewhat dual nature of this whole parsha. So, aspe aleimo ros chitzai achaleban. So I will pile up all these tzaras on them, and I will use up my arrows on them. So that sounds pretty terrible. But the Gemara in Sota and Daf Tes, Rashi refers to here, it's actually a good thing, that it means I will use up my arrows, but they won't be used up, that the Jews will still survive. So they'll go through terrible things, but they're still going to be around afterwards. And again, it's a part of the kind of mixed message that the soul Parsha and the soul Aliyah is conveying. And this next pasuk, Michutz Tishakol Cherev, Michadarim Ema. So here, talking about the sword doing damage on the outside. So the Gemara has a drasha on this, which was often cited by Poskim in the context of the pandemic. That the Gemara in Bava Kamma Daf Samach says, based on this pasuk, when there's Davar Ba'ir, so when there is some kind of a plague in the city, so then that sounds like it means a little bit of a question how to interpret it, but it sounds like it means stay inside, avoid being in the streets, avoid being in the public places. And those who wrote to Chuvas about the behavior during the pandemic, or Moshe Weiss wrote about this a lot, pointed to that Gemara and that drasha based on this pasuk, that Chazal were already telling us how to respond to pandemics, how to respond to situations of great danger on the outside, that there's an obligation to take care and to go inside and to understand that there is the sakana that we have to respond to. So let's look at the next pasuk, Amarti af Ehem Ashpisa Me'enesh Zichron. So I said, meaning kind of like it's a Havamina, that I could have destroyed them and wiped out their memory. So that's, again, a particularly difficult pasuk to read. And there are many different interpretations of what this language is meant to convey, af ehem. So it sounds like it has the word peya in it. And Rashi says that it means I will make them like peya, I will throw them away as something which is hefker. I'll get rid of it and just leave it to the mercy of whoever decides to pick it up. The Sforno has an interpretation here that it means that many of the Jews will, Rahman al-Atslan, be killed, but there will be some who will still be in a corner and will survive. The nation as a whole will survive. So that imagery of a corner is perhaps what's being evoked here. Peya represents not just that which is given away as hefker, but also that which is in the corner. And Rav Shamshon Rafael Hirsch focuses on that point also, and he has a little bit different way of interpreting it, that they will be shoved to a corner, they'll be pushed into a corner, meaning that their influence is going to be very reduced. Now, the Ramban understands here there's also a reference to the 10 lost tribes. Maybe that's also what the pasuk is conveying. But as the Ramban also notes, that this leads to the next part of the pasuk of Ashpisam Enesh Zichram, that could make their memory be forgotten among people. So the Ramban says that the whole purpose of the creation, the whole purpose of the Bria, is to be Mefarsim Kvod Hashem, is to publicize God's glory. And if the Jews are not going to be up to that task, so then it's understood why they're not going to be remembered, Chalila, if they're not living up to this. Now, again, there's so many mixed messages and subtexts and various themes that are found in this Aliyah and in this Parsha. And in some cases, it goes to the level of remez. So Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid points out on this pasuk that he thinks that this language of Zichron is a remez to the end of Megillas Esther, where it talks about the miracles of Purim being remembered, and there the language is Mizachram, Lo Yosef Mizaram. So that perhaps there's a positive link here also to the Hester Panim of the time of Purim, when we were saved, even though God's presence was not obvious, it was not spelled out. In the Baal Turim, he also points out that, looking on the Ramez level, that Ashbisa Me'enosh Zichron, so the last letter of those three words, is Men Shin Hey, going backwards, is Moshe, and it goes into the next pasuk, Lule Moshe, go backwards, that were it not for Moshe. And putting this all together, as the Parashas Ha'Chodesh discusses, that this is a way of saying that what was going on, what will happen in the future, was being shown to Moshe, the whole crisis with Haman. And he davened on our behalf, and it's a part of the whole message of this parsha. And were it not for Moshe davening for us, things would have been very dire. But again, it creates this linkage, this connection between the situation of the parsha's description of Hester Panim, but also the Yeshua that is still sometimes expressed through Hester Panim, and how that goes in both directions. While we're talking about Ramazim, so there's a often quoted story about the Ramban, that the Ramban had a Talmud named Avner, who became heretical, became completely rebellious against the whole Torah, and gave up everything. We were in a very angry way, and the Ramban was engaged in a conversation with him, and the student said that why he was pushed away is because somebody told him that in Hazino there's a remez to everything that will ever be, and he doesn't see how he is at all merumas in Hazino, so therefore he is dropping it all. So the Ramban said to him, so you want to see a remez? So if you look at this pasuk, Ashbisa Me'enosh Zichron, or Amarti Afa'ehem Ashbisa Me'enosh Zichron, so if you look at the third letter of those last four words, it's Aleph, Beis, Nun, Reish, spells out Avner, that spells out your name, and that's not a positive context, and he was very shocked by that response. So presumably here, the Ramban was responding to him on his level. Here he's saying that my whole faith was tied up in this kind of remez, and I'm blaming all my problems on the lack of this kind of a remez. So to that, the Ramban is saying, you want to make it all about that? So look how it could be all about that. And that was responding to him in the spirit of what he was saying. And that was very powerful. So just to look at the last Aliyah.
Did he end up like going back to Yisrael?
I don't know what happened to him after that, actually. But one way or another, it was a response that I think left him speechless, at least in the moment. So then the Aliyah ends, Ki goy ovad eitzos hema ve'ein behem tfuna. So this is a nation that has no sense, and they don't have any tfuna. They don't have any understanding. And here again, as far as the remez is concerned, and the connection to Purim, and that has to upon him. So the Rakeach notes that if we're looking again at the end of the words, so Ve'ein Bahem Tfuna, spelled backwards from the last letters, spells out Haman. So again, that kind of mysterious association with Purim. But we could also understand here, perhaps, that the reference to an Eitzah and a Tfuna, maybe that harkens to the Pasuk in Mishlei that the Gemara quotes when talking about human dignity, that as crucial as it is that we respect the dignity of humanity, the principle of Kavod HaBrios, that is an overwhelming halachic priority, but the Gemara says the one thing it does not take priority over is Chil Hashem. And the Gemara quotes the Pasuk of Ein Eitzah V'Ein Chachma V'Ein Tfuna L'Neged Hashem. There's no such thing as Eitzah, there's no such thing as Chachma when it is against God. And the truth is, that translation, you could question, does it mean that we just don't worry about Eitzah and Tfuna when God's covet is at stake? Or does that go to the definition of what is Eitzah and what is Chachma and what is Tfuna? And that was perhaps the topic of a back and forth between two of the students of Yisrael Salanter, two of the great students of Yisrael Salanter, where Reb Yitzchak Glazer, I think we mentioned him recently, and Rav Naftali Amsterdam, who I assume the street that YU was on was named after him. He was the great Talmud of Reb Yisrael Salanter. And they had a whole exchange of letters about the whole concept of Kavod Abrios and what exactly it represents. And it relates to this idea of how to understand that pasuk. So that's perhaps a part of what this Aliyah is ending off with, that they don't have Eitzah, they don't have Tfuna, so whatever they think they might be doing right, but if it's without a basic recognition of how it all stems from the honor of Ribbono Shel Olam and our mission on this earth, so then however much you might think that you have counsel and wisdom and understanding, ultimately, that is nothing of the sort. And it's a reminder that we have to go back to our roots and our core mission and to recognize that we are here to be emissaries of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and to bring His covenant to the world. And when that is not present, so then everything falls apart. But like we said before, that the flip side is that if we are reminded about this in a powerful enough way, so then hopefully that won't be the problem. And that's ultimately the hope of Hazinu, that all of its very harsh and negative sounding psukim can be internalized in a way that will make them unnecessary, and that indeed will lead to Tshuva Me'ava, and will lead to a complete reversal where everything is positive, and that even our mistakes are fuel for a better future, and that even our missteps are things we can learn from, and we can make into positive contributions. And as we mentioned last week, that's very much a theme of Sukkot, the idea that we now move from Tshuva Me'ira to Tshuva Me'ava. So it's not only that we're running away from the threats and from the punishments and from the problems that are the consequences of our misdeeds, but that we are actively looking to transform and to convert the lessons of our ill-spent past into a glorious future, and indeed, Haziv Lach, that the glory should return to us, and the message of the Esrog that is able to endure all the ups and downs and come out glorious, so too, that is the hope for the Jewish people, especially through Sukkot, and we should be able to take all of these themes of Hazinu, both the ups and the downs, the harsh words, and that which comes with them, and use them to be harnessed towards a much better perspective, and that as Hashem, Sukkot should be able to concretize these notions for us, and we should come out refreshed and energized and with a new sense of mission and what we can accomplish both individually and collectively. So I wish you all a wonderful Yontif. It should be a time of Simcha in the fullest sense of the word, in all meanings, and whoever hasn't seen a Simcha like the Simcha Space HaShoeva has never seen a Simcha. The Simcha of our Sukkot should be full and should bring us both internally and externally, individually and collectively, to where we want to be, and it should be the beginning of a very successful year in all things. I wish you all a wonderful Yantiv.
Thank you, Rabbi Chasmeach.